Welcome, everyone, to a Baseball America podcast, draft day style, along with J.J. Cooper and a whole mess of food from the Q Shack. I'm John Manuel. J.J., great day at Baseball America. It's a great day anytime there's free Q Shack, but it's also a great day when it's draft day. And a little break here in the action in between the first round, the supplemental rounds, and then rounds two through however many we get through. So we're going to take a little opportunity here to podcast. And they'll try to get through five, but we'll podcast the first round and the supplemental first round, podcast the first 46 picks. And, J.J., I think this is a really interesting first round of the draft. The first 20 to 23 picks, basically chalk, a lot of names that we expected. I would say no names that jumped up into the top 23 picks that we did not expect to be first rounders. But after that, a little all heck breaking loose, a little – it got a little squirrely there for a while, starting with Alan Dykstra at 23, and then really jumping up a notch, I thought, with Carlos Gutierrez at 27 to the Twins and Lonnie Chisenhall at 29 to the Indians. The end of the first round was kind of one surprise after another.
I think this was one of the more surprising first rounds I can remember in recent years. And like you said, it was especially at the tail end. Now, we said coming into this draft, it's actually, I mean, it's surprising, but I guess in some ways it's not, because one of the things that we wrote about, that you wrote about actually in the draft lead that we did in our draft preview, was this is a draft, you get about past like pick number 10 even, and you start getting into it where it really depends on what teams think. You know, there's a lot of disagreement on who's the number, you know, the 20th best player in the draft. And
right.
Because on one guy's board, you know, one team's board, maybe the number 35 guy in the draft on another team's board. There wasn't a whole
85.
Right. And there wasn't a whole lot of consensus after you got past maybe pick 15 or so, maybe 20. You know, like I said, it went kind of according to expectations up to around 20. But then after that, you know, it didn't seem like this year it was really as much a financial, you know, decisions. It wasn't assignability issues. It was more, it seemed like, teams saying, no, we like this guy.
And exactly.
Whether we like him, if everyone else doesn't, that's okay. We're going to take him here.
The only guy who really is like a assignability fall, went to the big money team, is really Garrett Cole at 28, for me anyway. That's the only obvious one. Let's go over the first round a little bit and just talk about it and how it went. Really no surprises in the first four: J.J., Tim Beckham, Pedro Alvarez, Eric Hosmer, Brian Mattis. Any of those picks that stick out for you as maybe a pick that you wouldn't have made? I mean, would you have made the Tim Beckham pick versus Buster Posey at one? That actually sounds like a signability
that
deal.
Signability, although you are talking here, it's really talent, too. I mean, like, you're not talking.
No, you're right.
Like, when the Pirates take Daniel Moskos over Matt Wieters, that's signability to me, because they're taking a guy who they say, no, he's clearly not as good, but he's cheaper.
Which is amazing that, you know, this year's team president, Frank Coonerly, came out publicly and said, oh, no, that was a baseball decision. I mean, like, he wasn't even around, but he says that the Pirates did that as a baseball decision. If it's a baseball decision, then that's even more egregious. I hope it was a signability choice.
Well, in the case of Beckham-Posey, you can get a lot of disagreement over which guy you think is the best long-term, you know, option. And that's the case. Yeah, Buster Posey, you know, floated up. There's some pretty high numbers floating around there is what he was asking for.
Yeah.
Then maybe you say, you know what? If we've got these two guys as 1 and 1A, why not go with 1A if 1A is going to cost us, you know, $5 million less?
Absolutely. No, I agree.
And that's not really a signability pick as much as it is. It worked. It was a factor in the decision,
Yep,
like.
That was an X factor for sure. But Posey goes fifth to the Giants. That was when we had a real hard time predicting. Jim Callis and Matt Blood arguing about that at 4 in the morning over who to go with. We ended up going with Smoke at 5 in our prediction. Ends up going Buster Posey. I think that makes all kinds of sense, JJ. I don't think the Giants could afford to take a first baseman when a catcher with a solid average big league bat, if not better than that, is available. You could take a middle-of-the-diamond player with a potentially average or above-average bat. I think the Giants had to take that. To me, Buster Posey, it could move very, very quickly in this organization, and he makes a lot of sense for San Francisco.
Especially when you're talking about, if you're comparing these two guys, you've got one guy who's considered to have a pretty elite bat, and he plays a premium defensive position.
Right.
You have another guy who has a pretty premium bat and plays the least premium defensive position. When you've got those, you've got an option choice between those two. Yeah, you got it to me. when there's a lot of, you know, there are people out there who think, there are scouts who think that Posey's bat is basically as good as Smoke's, you know.
If close. That's the, or, I wouldn't say as good, but close.
Very close.
Yeah.
If that's the case, then, you know, yeah, I mean, go with the premium position.
I don't think anyone really thinks Buster Posey's ever going to hit for above-average power, and I think that's the whole thing. That's the whole deal, really, with Justin Smoke. But I really do like –
but there's some debate over where – correct me if I'm wrong. I mean, you've heard more on this than I have, but, you know, with Smoke, there is a little more debate on that as far as, you know, how much, you know, how safe a bet is he.
Yeah, there is some debate. The college switch hitter deal is part of that. He really was not great with Team USA last summer. He dominated the Cape as a freshman, but really struggled last year with Team USA with Wood and with soft stuff away, which is what he saw all summer. I still think Justin Smoke, though, at 11 for Texas is a fantastic value at 11. And that really the really first shocker, JJ, let's just talk about the first round in the shocker department. The first shocker was Jason Castro at 10 to Houston. And Houston also in the supplemental round took Jordan Lyles, a right-hander out of a South Carolina high school. To me, Texas, like I don't know their new scouting director. I don't know many people in that organization. But that's just a rough, rough first round and supplemental round. I like Jason Castro. I think he'd be a big league regular, but he's a reach at 10. And Jordan Lyles was the seventh-rated player in the state of South Carolina. I just don't think he's a supplemental talent.
Well, and this is, I hate to say it, but when you're talking about the Astros, you're not talking about a team who's kind of earned the benefit of the doubt.
Correct.
You're talking about a team who year after year has shown they go for, you know, they're not going to go above slot. A lot of times, like last year, basically, I mean, they not only do not go above slot, but they'll just watch their entire draft walk away.
Correct.
Over slot, you know, going slot. And you're talking about a team that desperately needs a pretty massive infusion of talent. That's the kind of team that needs to go out there and say, you know what, we're going to, you know, like the Pirates did, we're going to go out and draft who we think's the best guy, and it doesn't matter what it's going to cost us. And instead, what they did is they went out and they've drafted guys who they're going to be able to get at very inexpensive prices for the spot they picked, but probably, you know, I would say in last case, you're talking about below slot.
These are below slot or at slot picks. There's no doubt about that. There's no way these guys were drafted, in my mind, they're just on the merits of their talent. And I just think that's the Astros selling themselves short as an organization. Again, they did it last year in the draft. They've done it the last few years. And I just think it's a bad time to be an Astros fan. They're just not getting it, in my opinion, on the scouting and player development side. And that's unfortunate. I think that all goes back to ownership. Drayton McClain gets the gas face from this observer. It's a Baseball America podcast. I got to say, I love the Nationals getting Aaron Crow at 9. That is some kind of coup there if they get him signed. I kind of like Brett Lowry at 16 for Milwaukee.
That seemed like it was a good spot for him. Like there have been, you know, talk about a guy who had some helium coming in.
Yeah, absolutely.
And sometimes with the helium, you got to worry
a little bit.
Like, you know, yes, he's having a great month. He's locked in. But does that change everything, you know, like the evaluation like that everyone had on him 6 months ago coming out of last year was, oh, he's, you know, he's a mid, probably second-round guy.
Yeah, the first two scouts I talked to about him both really, really liked him and thought of him as a supplemental to third-rounder. And then all of a sudden he was doing a workout for the team at number 7 in the Reds. I mean, you know, he was in the mix for a single-digit pick. So 16, like you said, really seems just about right. Even if he's just a third baseman, JJ, and not a catcher, he has value at 16, in my opinion. You could make the case he was the fourth best high school position player in this draft, and he was basically drafted right around there, although right ahead of him, Aaron Hicks and Ethan Martin, two-way players, both announced as position players, and Aaron Hicks could have gone earlier. We had our information was the Oakland A's liked him for their 12th pick, but as a pitcher, and he did not want to sign as a pitcher he wants to hit.
Although I'll say this, I also kind of like taking the position. The guys who really are, you know, like 50-50 flip a coin on those guys.
Oh, yeah, 92.
Take them as position players because 2 years from now, I mean, I know Rick Ankiel's shown that, yeah, I guess it can happen, but it's a lot easier to switch, put the bat away, and go to the mound than the other way around. And so if that's the case, you know, to me, yeah, hey, if a guy wants to play, you know, play in the outfield, put Hicks out there. 2 years from now, if he's hitting, you know, a buck 80 in low A, you go, you know, we think you're still got a lot of chance on the potential on the mound.
And I'm crazy, but they let Edwin Jackson pitch and hit in rookie ball. They let James McDonald hit some and then pitch, and he turned into a prospect as a pitcher. I wouldn't have a problem letting Aaron Hicks, if he signs quickly, get a couple innings here or there, or at least throw a bullpen. You got to let him throw some bullpens to keep his arm
keep
in shape.
Arm strength, yeah.
But let him get a few innings in the Gulf Coast League. And if Aaron Hicks sees, hey, wait a minute, I'm sawing guys off, I'm dominating with 97-mile-an-hour stuff like I did in high school, maybe he says, maybe I want to try this pitching thing. I agree with you, but I really do hope that teams are a little bit more experimental and give guys who are two-way players like that a shot. So to me, really just seems like those are some intriguing picks at 15, 14, 15, 16. David Cooper, I thought a little reach at 17, but this guy can really hit. And your American League club, that makes more sense for David Cooper because there's some scouts who think he's really below average defensively at first. So it's not who I would have taken at 17 for Toronto, but I can see why they took him. He could really hit.
And I understand the argument that, hey, you can take a first baseman more if you're an AL team because you do have two positions that he can play at. At the same time, to me, you better be talking about a premium bat to draft a guy in the first round who
But he could be a premium
bat.
And
he could
be.
I'm saying, but he better be, because if you're drafting a guy who you're thinking already he's got a decent chance to be a DH, that's the easiest position to fill, because you've always got guys you should always have guys in the organization who can hit.
No, you're right. Absolutely. It's Baseball America podcast. I'm John Manuel. He is J.J. Cooper. The back of the first round, J.J., is really where it got squirrely. Christian Friedrich falling all the way to 25 of the Rockies. That was a surprise. But Carlos Gutierrez and Lonnie Chisenhall, 27 and 29, a couple of real surprises. Got a little info on one of those, obviously. Carlos Gutierrez is the one I was able to talk to a Twins official already. Twins drafted him as a starter. They saw him great. They think the sinker ball, he could be really – they actually said this could be a Tim Hudson kind of guy. Guy who works up the sinker, get the slider up to average, give him over to Rick Knapp, their fine pitching coordinator, get him to teach a changeup, and let's see this guy go.
And see that? I mean, that's – and we're talking about a guy who, for a reliever, you know college ball much more than I do. But from what I've seen of him, you're talking about a guy who's not your come in, throw, get three outs, wander back off, and don't see him again for a couple of days.
Right, right. No, you're right.
He's much more of a rubber arm guy who you can see as far as the arm strength and all, as far as being worked, it shouldn't be as much of an issue to work him up.
No, you're right. And I really like Carlos Gutierrez. I don't like him at 27 necessarily because I think they could have gotten him later. But the thing is, at 31 – Minnesota got Shooter Hunt, a guy that we thought would have maybe gone more likely at 27. So Minnesota, in my mind, off to a pretty good start with this draft. Hicks, Hunt, Gutierrez, guys they were convicted about.
And you see a lot of times when a team does have multiple picks in the first round, one of the things that comes out of that is that you'll often see that a team will end up drafting a guy, who they have a pre-draft, not a pre-draft deal, I guess, but they've reached an agreement. You know what? The slot for this is this, but we'll pay you this, which you're not going to make nearly that much if you go where you're projected to go. And you have to do that almost if you have a draft budget that's not that much significantly more than when you have just a first-round pick, because three picks in the top 31 is going to cost you a lot more than if you just have normally, one first-round pick.
I agree. No, good points all. Some other picks that really stood out for me, J.J., Alan Dykstra, a San Diego kid, going to the Padres at 23. He's got big-time power. I wonder if the Padres are going to try him out at third base. He's got the arm for it. I don't think he has the agility for it, but it really him as a first baseman, the Padres taking a college first baseman at 23 with Adrian Gonzalez in the big leagues. That was a curious one for me, but I love the Padres' supplemental draft pick of Jeff Decker, the Arizona high school kid, and I like Logan Forsyth, a third baseman out of Arkansas, right-handed hitter. Very scrappy player who's got solid average tools across the board. Really a lot like an Aaron Hill with the Blue Jays. Maybe not quite Aaron Hill's power potential, but a really solid player, a versatile player. Could be a third, second baseman. Solid right-handed college bat. Played great for Team USA last year. And Jeff Decker, to me, is one of the best high school bats in this draft. He's just 5'10", 180. He just doesn't look the part. But the guy is short to the ball, all kinds of power. He's a classic Grady Fuson pick for me. And if it doesn't work out for him as a hitter, again, you put him as a left-hander, solid average stuff, spins a breaking ball, put him on the mound. At the very least, he could turn into a bullpen, you know, loogie left-handed reliever.
I know we have a lot of Red Sox fans. We have a lot of Yankees fans listening to the podcast. I know
we should talk about those guys.
We should talk about those guys a little bit. The Yankees did what the Yankees do.
That's right.
Which is pretty much every draft, once they figured out, you know, hey, winning in Tampa, no matter how much the boss wants us to do it,
not good.
Not that important. Yeah. Winning in Columbus, not that important. Hey, you know what? We can actually use our massive financial advantage to, you know, basically dominate the draft. Once they figure that out, you know, it's been very good for them. Well,
they have brought their financial resources to bear across every level, international, major league, free agent, keeping their own players, and now the draft.
And that's what Gerrit Cole is. Gerrit Cole, as we said, if there's one player in this draft who slipped significantly because of his bonus demands, it'd be Gerrit Cole.
Yeah, his bonus demands, A, and then B, there was the mound demeanor, the immature mound demeanor, the lack of maturity, however you want to put it. This is not a guy who endeared himself to a lot of scouts, and what we hear didn't even endear himself to a lot of teammates. But guess what? You know, a lot of 17-year-olds are immature. A lot of 18-year-olds are immature. What matters is how he is when he's 21, 22 years old, and he's in the major league.
The player selected one pick after him?
Stole from his teammates.
Yes.
And his coaches.
And he went one pick later. So, I mean, a little mound immaturity is probably, you know, the two.
That's a great little bit of perspective there.
But and then the Red Sox did pretty much a very similar thing. Casey Kelly's going to cost
some money.
We're
talking about Lonnie Chisenhall, by the way.
We're talking about Lonnie Chisenhall, not Casey Kelly. Let me get this
Who's a first-round talent, I would say. But in my opinion, I wouldn't touch that guy. And I know there's redemption. And, hey, Clay Buchholz stole two. And the Red Sox, that worked out pretty well for the Red Sox. He stole computers and stuff when he was in junior college. But for me, I wouldn't touch Lonnie Chisenhall. That's just me.
It's a riskier pick than the talent would indicate.
Correct. But he's a left-handed bat, versatile defensively, can hit. Could be an offensive second baseman. Could be an offensive third baseman. Could be a right fielder.
And it's almost and because of everything that happened, the reality is that there's a chance to get him a year early because
also a good point.
If Lonnie Chisenhall had not gotten into trouble at South Carolina, he'd be finishing up his sophomore season right now, and basically he would be one of the top prospects in the 09 draft.
No, you're right. Let's talk about the Red Sox real quick. You already hinted at them. Casey Kelly at 30, Brian Price out of Rice at 45. We definitely heard the Red Sox tied to Brian Price for a lot of this spring, the closer at Rice. They had some success with Bryce Cox in the minor leagues, another Rice reliever who didn't quite pan out yet, and he's been very inconsistent. Brian Price is very similar, not quite as much of stuff as Bryce Cox. He's been a little steadier in college. He didn't just have three amazing months. He's had a couple years of up and down. The Red Sox have tried the college reliever route several times. Craig Hansen and Brian Price hasn't quite worked out. Brian Price might work out better than Bryce Cox did. Casey Kelly, to me, is just a premium athlete, and I like the Red Sox being the kind of team that can buy him out of his commitment to Tennessee as a football quarterback. And whether he's a shortstop or a pitcher for them, they're the kind of team that can afford to be patient. They have enough talent in their farm system to figure out Casey Kelly. But to me, spend money on athletes, and that's what the Red Sox are going to do with Casey Kelly.
Well, the thing that we saw a lot of college relievers go,
yep,
especially basically
all in a row from 19 to 20.
Once you got the pick 19.
Basically 19 to 21, three in a row with Andrew Cashner to the Cubs.
Then we also saw
Josh
Daniel
Fields.
Schlereth a little later,
yes.
Carlos Gutierrez a little later. You know, Price, what we're talking about. I think a big reason for that is we didn't see the college starters go this year because the reality was is there weren't enough college starters. You know, Sheppers gets hurt basically, you know, essentially a month, you know.
Yeah, you're right.
Everyone finds out a month before the draft, a little less than a month before the draft, oh, he's not going to, you know, be ready.
And Shooter Hunt drops.
Shooter Hunt drops because of, you know, concerns. And so there weren't the college starters out there. Well,
and teams had not decided not to reach for a college starter, like, say, a Tyson Ross, like a Scott Gorgon, a couple guys that we thought could jump up.
But don't reach for those guys. And instead, the reality is teams went out and said, you know where the best arms are out there? They're college relievers. And some of these guys, you know, I know some of these guys are going to move quick, and you'll see them up in the big leagues before long. But the reality also is that some of these guys will probably end up, at least a couple of them, will, you know, a lot of teams make guys starters in the minors because
right.
You want to give them the innings, regular innings. And if you do that, one or two or three of these guys who have the arms, we might find out, you know, colleges are not always – putting a guy in the back of the pen
because of their profile.
Because that's where they profile. You want a strong arm back there. It may be a case, you know, sometimes it is. Sometimes, like Joshua Fields.
Right.
With his delivery and all, with his build, you don't look at him and say, you know, you could put him out as a starter. He could throw like that for 6-7 innings and, you know, and I probably not.
You know, I actually think I see why the Mariners would draft a Josh Fields, because you put Josh Fields into the role that Brandon Morrow had been filling, and then you move Brandon Morrow into the rotation like they wanted to, like they did in winter ball. And that way, you don't feel like you're cheating your big league team by moving Brandon Morrow out of the relief role that he'd been in. Kind of like if the Yankees could draft someone who could step right in to the bullpen to take Jabba Chamberlain's old role, that way they'd feel less guilty about Jabba Chamberlain transitioning into the rotation. Does that make any – I'm trying to think of how the Mariners would think about this. And then, again, with the Mets, you know –
The Mets love to draft.
The Mets wanted Ryan Perry at 22, and the Tigers went up and got Ryan Perry instead. I wouldn't be shocked if you saw Ryan Perry or Andrew Cashner in the big leagues this year in big leagues bullpens. And they went through Crucetta. They went through Yorman Bizardo. They've turned through some real chaff in the Detroit bullpen this year. And, you know, with all that going on, I think if I were Detroit, I'd go ahead and give Ryan Perry a shot at helping my big league team this year. So we also forgot to talk about one other Yankee pick, and I want to talk about J.J. at 44, Jeremy Bleich. I love this pick for the Yankees. They need left-handed pitching. Jeremy Bleich had first-round talent. He was injured this year, elbow strain. He has come back. He pitched 4 very good innings in the regional. He walked some guys. I think he walked 5 against Arkansas, but it was 4 scoreless innings. The Yankees obviously weren't on that. That'll be a nice summer follow, if you ask me, where they just evaluate him. And the Yankees, you know, had an extra pick, and they spent on a high-ceiling left-hander, something they really don't have in their farm system. It's the Baseball America podcast. He is J.J. Cooper. I am John Manuel. We are anxiously awaiting rounds 2 through 5, hopefully, to go the rest of the day. J.J., let's wrap up with some other – I wanted to just talk about the broadcast a little bit. What did you think of the ESPN broadcast today? I mean, I like having the draft on TV, but I'm almost like – it's almost like be careful what you wish for. You might get it. Right now, it's really a matter of the draft on TV is a neat TV show, but I think it certainly could be better. I'd love to see a little more FaceTime for a good old Jim Callis.
Obviously, yeah, we're a little biased on that. But, yeah, I do think, though, that it was a better broadcast this year than last year, partly because they scaled back. I felt like last year they had a chorus of, you know, 42 experts, and so it was something where trying to proportion out time meant that, okay, now you say something for 5 seconds. Now you say something for 5 seconds. This year, they kind of scaled it back. They had the four-man podium or table.
And kudos to Chris Singleton, who I thought was really solid.
It was outstanding.
Yeah.
I thought this year what they – another thing they did well was they got a little more in-depth. They got a little more – you know, we started the start of it with Steve Phillips explaining the 2-8 scouting scale, which
– that was good.
I feel pretty confident it's one of the first times we've seen the 2-8 scouting scale explained on ESPN. And when even, you know – as players were taken, there was a little bit of debate on, you know, okay, like taking college relievers. You know,
right.
You know, there was debates on the things that were very logical questions coming out of this draft, but they were done in a way kind of understanding that, you know what, if you're watching this, you understand something about baseball.
Right.
The casual fan probably isn't going to sit down and say, I'm going to spend 3 hours watching guys who I've never heard of and, you know, won't hear of again. You have to follow baseball to know who Pedro Alvarez is. And the great thing about that is they aimed it, I felt, a little bit more at that.
They did.
That fan who knows something about it, that Baseball
time,
America reader.
I think they really aimed it really to that. It's like, okay, here's a Major League Baseball fan who watches baseball tonight. They pumped it up on baseball tonight, the previous nights. But then they decide, okay, if you're already here, if you're watching this, you do want to go a little bit more in depth. You're ready to make that plunge. And they cater to that kind of reader, listener, viewer. I appreciated that.
And the other things that, you know, just kind of looking at it, like knowing – from what we do.
Time to not do the radio interviews over the phone. I mean, the
right,
interviews
I thought
phone.
The interviews with the players, the reality is that there was about one good quote out of, you know, 10 interviews. But the effort that's involved in going out there and getting video of pretty much almost everyone taken in the first round, that's significant. That's not easy when you're talking about, you know, I know that they had help probably from, you know, somewhat from MLB, but stuff like that is impressive. Stuff like,
I thought so.
You know, and they had a group of ESPN people. You know, Steve Phillips has insight because he's He's gone through this.
He prepares, and he, you know, Peter Gamet with him, and he prepared. He read a lot of our Baseball America scouting reports.
Peter Gamet, you know, they read Baseball America stuff, which is good.
Peter and obviously sees these guys in the tape,
you know, and Chris Singleton gave a very insightful insight. You know, a lot of insightful insight. Yeah, he gave some insight from the player perspective, and it wasn't generic.
Well, here's the. And I will toot our own horns a little bit here, but the thing I like most about it is everyone on that panel, everyone up there was either ESPN or an MLB guy in Frank Marcos. And everything having to do with the draft, you got the commissioner, Bud Selig, you got ESPN and Major League Baseball, these two behemoths, and squeezed in there was Jim Callis of Baseball America. And you look on all the desks, all the tables there, and there were Baseball America magazines, and you look at ESPN, and it's Baseball America rankings or referenced in their graphics. And J.J., I was telling you, that's just that's not because we're anywhere near as big as ESPN or MLB. That's because we earned our place at that table, which I'm very proud of, and that's a high standard we have to live up to. That's what we hope we lived up to in our draft preview coverage coming up to today. Hope we lived up to that today in our coverage and in this podcast. I hope to keep living up to it tonight and tomorrow as the draft continues. We'll wrap up the podcast. Send those emails into us at podcast@baseballamerica.com. We'll probably do a wrap-up draft podcast this weekend. We'll be in the office Saturday and Sunday, so we'll probably record one of those. I feel like we owe people a regular podcast that's not college-related anyway, because we've been a little short on those lately. So for J.J. Cooper, I'm John Manuel. Thanks so much for the download here at baseballamerica.com and iTunes. Until next time, so long, everybody.